it's really all about where does that initial piece of money come from, that equity, that deposit. And the good news is it doesn't have to come from the developer. It could be somebody else who has some money.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we continue the conversation with Managing Director of Property Mastermind, Bob Anderson, who will divulge the strategy he has used to develop property, no money down, and how to attract money like a magnet. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. Upon learning that he could make good money as a developer with no money down, Anderson discovered it was an eye-opener. This is something that he feels was also a drawback.
As I said, the big learn from that was that you could make good money out of property development, which I assumed you could. That's why I wanted to go there. But that you could actually do it with little or no money of your own. So that was an eye-opener. And would you believe the next deal I did was a different strategy where I made quite good money out of putting no money into that deal as well. So I was pretty hot to trot after my first deal. And needless to say, because, you know, now I wasn't 10 foot tall and bulletproof, I was, as they say. Well, we made that 3 meters tall and bulletproof. Now 3.3 meters tall and bulletproof. And my sister's boyfriend at the time, my sister Lorraine, had a boyfriend called Keith, and Keith was an earth mover. And Keith had a bit of money from his earth moving, and he said, "Geez, you did well out of that one, Bob." And I said, "Yeah, I did pretty well, Keith, hey? I'm pretty smart." And actually, well, we know the truth now, didn't. And he said, "Bob, I've got some money." He said, "How about you go and find a deal and we'll do it together. I'll put the money in." And I said, "Yeah, okay, I'll do that." And I did, and I found another deal. And Keith and I did it. Keith put the money in. He put the, you know, the equity in, borrowed the rest from the bank, and did another deal. I call that a joint venture with a money partner these days, or an equity partner. It's very common, very, very common strategy that I use and my students use. And now I've done two property developments, made some seriously good money, and I haven't put 5 cents of my own money up yet. And so that gave me the passion. But as I said, I sort of pushed on, and then there was a change in the market, which I mentioned just previously.
Yes.
And so that was the sort of what I needed to straighten me up a bit and sort me out. I got a little bit too gung-ho, a little bit too big. You know, I still didn't have the knowledge base behind me. You know, I had no education. I had no one to hold my hand. Nobody to, you know, ring up and ask questions to and that sort of thing. So,
to become more educated on the development process, he sought out professional people such as town planners who taught invaluable information about yields and feasibility.
Because there's no TAFE courses, there's no uni courses. Not that a uni course, I'll be honest. I have mentored some people who've gone through the uni courses, and they're great for getting a job in the big companies, you know, Mervac and Lendlease. But as far as actually being really street smart and using a lot of, you know, creative stuff to make a lot of money, they really don't teach it there.
No.
But there's a place for everything. And if for people that want to just go and work for a property development company on a, you know, reasonably good salary, then, you know, go and get a degree in property development. But none of that was around then. So it was a fair bit of trial and error. But I met a couple of good professional people. As I said, a town planner, and I was doing subdivisions mainly for about the first 4 years. That's all I did. I didn't build any buildings. I didn't do townhouses for about 4 years. And so I got some good, I got to understand some costing and how to cost subdivisions and how to calculate the yield, which is how many lots a particular size block of land would produce. And I got to understand feasibilities, therefore how to do the numbers, which is critically important. I'm going to make sure it makes a profit. And because of my marketing background, I understood that. So I was building up this skill set as well, that because a developer wears quite a few hats. You know, as I said before, it's about managing people and managing a process. And so I was building a team of people, and I was learning the process to a point where well, I've become quite proficient at it. And you know, the sort of the dangerous part of my career was pretty much over.
As Anderson was doing subdivisions, which takes time, like any other property venture, where did he get the cash flow to sustain his lifestyle?
I kept the real estate job going for a little while until I'd finished that second project, the one I did with my sister's boyfriend. So I had quite a bit of cash. I don't know what the present day equivalent would be, but it'd be at least the equivalent of a nice new house, probably. You know, I don't know what that is. Half a mil, maybe. I don't know what the equivalent would be these days. But so that certainly sustained me for a while I got to a point where I could, draw profits out. But what I also realised is that on some of the projects that I was doing, I was using what we call commercial finance, where I was actually able to pay myself a project management fee on my own projects. And so I could draw a basic wage, or a reasonable wage actually, on the way through the development as being the project manager of the development, even though it was me the developer. So a developer can be a project manager. In fact, most developers project manage their own projects. But when using commercial finance, you can pay yourself that. So that gave me a good little earn on the way through. Plus I had some capital behind me, which I could use as my equity. You know, the bank will give you 75 or 80% of what you need, but you've got to put some money in yourself. And that's sort of my profits with what I rolled back into that with a little bit to get me through. And then I started living off, I had more than enough to live off my project management fees.
Yes.
Quite a good lifestyle living off them.
Books that he used to condition his mindset included those as Think and Grow Rich and Secrets of the Millionaire Mind.
Some of the old favourites, of course, as I said, back in the early days, Think and Grow Rich and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. One that probably gave me a bit of a shift in mindset. I mean, I was entrepreneurial, I was brave, but you got to remember that I was brought up in a very middle-class family. As I said, my dad was a spray-painter panel beater, and he worked often spray-painted and fixed cars on weekends to earn extra money, to give his kids a good life and holidays and put them through good schools and all that sort of stuff. So I didn't get any real investment learning from him. So I was either going to come from people I knew or books. But it was half T. Eker's book, The Millionaire Mindset, made me realise a bit more about mindset. I think I was part of the way there. I didn't have a problem with wealth or money. I didn't feel guilty about the sort of money I was making. And I was making pretty reasonable money. But just that whole book really set the tone for me about how wealthy people think differently from average people in so many ways. I can't remember now, there's probably about 20 different extracts that he goes through about what, analysing a successful, we know that success is a lot more than just wealth, of course, but that sort of view and how they view things, and the unsuccessful person views something this way, it's often with a lack sort of mentality, where the other one is more of an abundant or a surplus sort of mentality. And that was quite interesting. That's probably the book that changed my mindset more than any other, in fact.
Although Anderson didn't have any one particular mentor who guided him through his property journey, he did meet a professional in the field who made him realize that you can never go broke making a profit.
Although I did meet a number of successful people along the way, and I took a bit from each of them, it's an old saying, and in fact, the person that told me this, I'm sure you're not the first person to say it, but very early in the piece, I met an Italian builder developer, and he was a lovely guy. And he used to build apartment blocks, and he's like a scaled-down version of Harry Triggerboff, probably, but not in size. I don't think you can scale Harry down in size, but in dollars, And but he said, something, Bob, you never go broke making a profit. And at the time, I thought, geez, John, that's like it's a bit stupid. Of course, you can't go broke making a profit. It took me a little while to think about it. I know what he meant now, of course. Soon after that, I knew what he meant. Sometimes, you just try and push too hard for too much. And sometimes you're better off taking a good deal or a good profit. And money has a value in time. And markets can change and all sorts of stuff, If there's a good profit, it's looking at the face and it's simple and it's there, and you can move on. Sometimes you just take that rather than wait for the little bit extra. You know, you wait for that bit extra and anything could happen.
Ah, okay. That's a really good analogy or interesting point to make. So what I'm understanding here is that if you do see profit there, don't be greedy and just take it. I mean, obviously you can maximize it eventually.
I think it's not being greedy. I think, you know, if you have to see the core, I've seen some people that just get fixated with the number. You know, it could be a property they're selling. I mean, I always see it with people that are selling development sites, and I might be looking at buying it. I met a guy once, he wanted $1 million for his site.
That depends on what's around the area as well, too. Was that
It was probably worth close to a mil. But I made some offers lower. But I came to realise that he just had this number in his mind was a million. And that was it. It was the number. And I think I did talk to him because I was dealing directly with him. I think he just wanted to be able to tell everybody, his friends and relatives, I sold my block of land for $1 million. I honestly think, I don't think he wanted to say, I sold it for $972,000. He just became fixated on the million. And so, I mean, price is only part of it because there's other things like terms, conditions and time. And so I went the other way and paid the million, but got a long-term settlement with a couple of reasonable conditions in there, and which to me was better than paying 950, which is sort of what I was looking at doing initially, with a short settlement. And that was just an example of somebody. You know, there's a guy. I think he's just fixated on that number. Nothing was going to move him off that number. But then, you know, the length. When he got it, he didn't really care if he waited, you know, 9 months for it, as long as he got the mill. He'd rather get $1 million in 9 months than get $950 in 30 days.
Getting into the nuts and bolts of Anderson's strategy for development, he has dealt with all three forms of product.
In terms of properties, there's basically three types, what I call product. So typically I'd be either developing land, as in, you know, lots of land, vacant land, if you like, townhouses or to some degree apartments. So typically it'd be that. As I said, in the first 4 years of my developing life, I just did land subdivision. So I was just doing blocks of land and selling it to people who wanted to build and selling it to builders. And then, as I said, I was forced to actually end up putting houses on them to get out of a sticky situation. So I tend to work capital cities. I don't do a lot of regional and I generally don't do mining towns at all. Mining towns, you know, you've got to be the first in and the first out. I think there's plenty of casualties out there that have done got hurt on mining towns. So I tend to do the higher growth areas. I tend to do more the larger cities, if not capitals, at least larger regional cities or capital cities. So at the moment I'm developing in Brisbane, I'm developing in Melbourne, and I'm also looking at developing a retirement village, which is something of a specialty of mine, in New South Wales. So I'm not tied to locality, and I'm not tied to any three of those products.
However, analysing each of the micro markets in a region and getting to know the localities is important.
So, you know, we talk about the Sydney property market. Well, there's probably 30 different micro markets in Sydney, and they're all sort of working different cycles, different price points and so forth. So you really, if there's one thing you've got to do as a property developer, it's get to know your local market. So you're better off choosing a smaller area. Could be one or two council areas, two or three suburbs, whatever it is, and become a real expert in that area, really understand land values, understand, let's say, what a townhouse is worth, how big they are, and, you know, should they be doing two beds or three beds, that sort of thing. Really get to understand the local market. That's what you need to do, because property development is pretty local. It's not, you can't just say, you know, Sydney, I'll develop anywhere in Sydney, because there's so many markets and you won't understand all of them at the same time. That's a big take. That's where a lot of people go wrong when they start. You get what I call your patch. And so I do that. I do develop interstate as well, but I've got good connections interstate as well that can feed me a lot of that information. And so I'm happy to do any of those three. And as I said, you know, something like a retirement village is pretty special as well, but it's probably not something someone would start off at. With a lot of my students, they start off with just small projects generally. It could be what we call a splitter. It could be turning one block into two blocks. It could be just a small subdivision. It could be dropping another house or perhaps a duplex in the backyard of an existing house. It could be demolishing a house and building, you know, three. Some often they start off with small projects. Some start off with slightly bigger ones. It depending on, you know, well, a couple of things, how much money they got. But not only that, they could be using one of the strategies I teach where you can do developments with little or no money, in which case the size is not so relevant.
Coming up after the break, we'll discover the secret to how you can start developing a property without putting any of your own money forth.
The developer doesn't have to put the money in. It's somebody else's money. And that becomes, there's lots of ways of structuring that.
Find out about the personal habit which has contributed to his success.
I won't go to bed of an evening unless I've planned the next day and all the little things I want to achieve and want to do.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey podcast listeners, if you're finding this podcast super informative, then guess what? I'm giving you an exclusive free case study from property investors like this one just for listening. These case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific strategies and numbers of their portfolio. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. So what does he do to start developing a property, no money down?
The most common one that a lot of my students use is called a joint venture with a money partner. I'll keep it pretty simple. Let's just say that to do a property development, we have to put a certain amount of money down. We call it a deposit. In the development world, we call that equity. We've got to put down, let's say, 20 or 25% of our costs. We've got to put that money in first. And the bank will lend us the rest of the money. It's not much different from buying a house where we put out, pay a deposit, and the bank lends us the rest of the money. On a development, we've got to put some money down and the bank will lend us the rest. So it's really all about where does that initial piece of money come from, that equity, that deposit. And the good news is it doesn't have to come from the developer. It could be somebody else who has some money. And so their role is to put in that initial amount of money. And then when that's in, then the bank lends the rest. The developer doesn't have to put the money in. It's somebody else's money. And that becomes, there's lots of ways of structuring that, but that becomes like basically a type of joint venture. And that money could be simply a loan where they get a high interest rate, or they could, in fact, become part of the project where they get a big chunk of the profits as well. So they get their money back at the end and they get a chunk of the profits. So it's a good deal both ways. Like any sort of joint venture or anything where you've got two people, it has to be a good win-win for both. And there's lots of people out there that have money that want more than the few percent the bank will give you. And they can get some very high returns by putting that capital into a property development. They don't have to have the knowledge or anything. They don't have to do any of the work. They just put the money part in. My student, or if they, you know, I've taught them how to do it. They put in what I call the smart work, and they find the deal and they make it happen. And so, for the developer, they get let's say 50% of the profits and put no money in at all. Yeah. For the investor, they might get 50% of the profits. They put their money in, get it out, and they get it. So it's a win-win. That's a very common strategy. It's the most popular one, but there's plenty of others. The vendor finance one I talked about earlier.
Another thing you can do is enter into a joint venture with the landowner.
There's lots of them. The beautiful thing is that if people want to get into property development but they don't have much money, it doesn't matter. What you need is knowledge. And there's two components to do a property development. You have to have the knowledge to know what you're doing, but you have to have some money. The bank will give you most of it, but not all of it. But getting the money, I've got a whole range of strategies for, you know, how you get the money. But the money is not the bit that's in short supply. It's the knowledge. And when you've got the knowledge, you'll attract money like a magnet. And that's why, you know, these strategies are great because they can get people started straight away. They don't have to save up heaps of money for equity to do a development. They can, in fact, many of my students that are doing like multiple projects, I've got students doing 6-8 projects at a time, $30, $40, $50 million worth of projects at a time, and they don't have even 5 cents invested in any of those projects. And they're just using different creative strategies.
A personal habit which Anderson attributes to his success is the art of prioritising his day.
I probably became really sharp, and maybe I'm not as sharp as I was. I don't know. You know, getting older, who knows? But I think, you know, one of the things I had to do when I first became involved, and not even property development, but in selling real estate, is, like we all, I think we all have something that maybe we're a little bit weak in, maybe more than others. And with me, it was procrastination. I came to realise it fairly quickly. I'd put things off if they were difficult. So what do I do? I sort of half smart. Each morning, I'd do a list of things I wanted to achieve that day. But what I'd do is I'd say, okay, what's the easy? Oh, this is easy. I'll do this, and I do all the easy stuff first. And then invariably, what happens at the end of the day, you haven't done everything, and the only thing that's left is the hard stuff, the stuff you didn't want to do. And so that'd go on tomorrow's list. And so what I wasn't doing, two things. I wasn't prioritising. I should have worked out every morning what's the most important thing in order of priority and do that. It could be the hardest thing I wanted to do all day, but I'd do it, you know, in priority. So if I didn't get everything done, then it wasn't so important. The other thing is that I learned not to do that every morning. I learned to do it the evening before. And I'd never go to bed. In fact, I still do it. I won't go to bed of an evening unless I've planned the next day and all the little things I want to achieve and want to do. And ideally even try and timeline them.
That's a great habit.
It's not a world revelation. It's just one of the little things that I think pays dividends.
If Anderson were to meet himself from 10 years ago, he would tell himself to loosen up a little bit more.
Probably I may have been a bit quite intense, and probably what I'd say to myself, listen, just loosen up a bit, Bob. You know, relax. As I say, you know, smell the roses a bit more. You know, you can be very successful in property development. I think I used to, I don't know what it was. It was just, you know, all the energy, the adrenaline and everything. And, oh, it's a joy ahead of you. Don't worry. Just probably like just relax, you know, do everything right, but just chill a bit more. I think, you know, that's probably, you know, maybe 10 years ago, I was probably a bit more wound up. But as far as property development goes, I mean, see, 10 years ago, I hadn't quite started my education side of my business. And so I was 100% property development. Whereas, and exactly 10 years ago, it was sort of in my mind and I was starting to organise it. But I suppose what I didn't know 10 years ago is how much I was going to enjoy it.
Ha, that's excellent. Well, that's good news to tell him. I mean, like, you know, be prepared that they're going to have so much joy in education.
Yeah. I suppose I would have said to myself, this thing you're working on now, it's going to be your prime reason for keep going in a way. It's going to give you a lot of fulfillment, a lot of happiness. You're going to meet a lot of great people. So get cracking and get it finished, Bob. The sooner you do that, the better.
With an expertise in subdivisions, he has come to recognise the power of cash flow and how developers have an advantage over the market.
At the time, yeah, I used to sell everything I developed because mostly it was vacant land anyway. It took me a little while to realise that as a developer, we've got an enormous advantage over the rest of the market. We've got a huge advantage over all other investors in that we develop property at raw cost, whereas most investors are buying at retail price. Certainly there's some distressed sales sometimes or mortgagees in possession or whatever, you know, whatever it is, and sometimes you can get a great deal, but, you know, there's always a million people fighting over those. But, for instance, if a property was worth, $700,000, a townhouse was worth $700,000 when it was finished, as a developer, we're getting it for, what, probably $550,000. We're not paying legals and stamp duty on the acquisition because we already own it.
That's right, yeah.
And we're not paying commission on the sale because we're not selling it. So it's a huge advantage. And, you know, it's not accidental that property developers have very large property portfolios. And the reason they do is that they're getting property at absolute core cost. And so as a result, they don't have to keep saving up the deposits all the time like normal people do. You know, most people that buy investments, they need the market to rise so that they can, refinance and harvest their equity and put it down. And it's nearly always 100% debt, if not 105%. Whereas as developers, we just keep using our profit as our deposit. And so we don't have to come up with cash deposits all the time. We just leave our profit in there.
Yep. And also on top of that, you're creating equity as well to automatically.
And less debt. You know, we've probably got 75, 80% debt, whereas someone else has got 100% debt or 105%. And so they're generally cash flow neutral or cash flow positive.
Ultimately, what they have as property developers is the flexibility to decide whether to sell the projects or keep them.
Today's interest rates, they're brand new, they're full depreciation. There's minimum to no maintenance, we could do three townhouses. And the brilliant thing is, what could we do? We could keep three, we could sell three, we could keep one, sell two, keep two, sell one. Yeah, we've got all this flexibility in terms of how we treat our sales. Even something as simple as a duplex. We could sell two, keep two, sell one, keep one. There's three opportunities. And the ones we sell gives us cash. We need cash. Cash is king. We need cash to, you know, for all our lifestyle, our holidays, our going out, our school fees, whatever. That's the ones we sell. We get cash. The ones we keep, we can keep with no pain. We keep the long, same as any normal investor, we keep it for long-term capital growth. But the beauty is we got it at raw cost, with probably cash flow positive, and we can keep, well, as many as we can finance. You need some good finance broker then, and you can keep as many as you can keep, as I say.
And why wouldn't you keep the properties you've worked hard to develop?
It's a great asset class, isn't it? I mean, it's got a long history. Property goes on forever. It's all there's highs and lows in the middle, but it's a long-term play, property. So that's okay. The ones we keep, we put aside, and the ones that we sell as our cash. The beautiful thing is, some people, because they're in this negative geared world, you know, where they're paying full retail price and probably 105% including legals and stamps, they're often in negative gearing. And a lot of investors, very sadly, it hurts them. They just get sick of being negative geared, coming up with the money every month. And as a result, they've got a couple of, and all they ever see is that's their life. Because as soon as it starts, the rents go up and, things start to improve, they're encouraged to go and refinance, harvest some equity and go get another one and stay in the pain until somewhere near retirement age, they cash out of some of them, go into a positive cash flow. The beautiful thing about getting properties so cheap as developers, we're in a positive cash flow virtually from day one, and we don't have to sell. And so what invariably happens is all the cash we've ever wanted is the ones we sell. The ones that we've kept, we don't have to sell them. And we've kept them and paid them down over the years because they were never negative geared in the first place, and we got them at raw cost.
For the next 5 years, Anderson is excited about continuing to do what he loves and balancing his time.
Keep it going. Keep doing it. I sort of restructured a lot of it. As well as to how I, how I promote my products and that sort of thing. It's loosened up a bit of time for me, but just do more of it. I love property so much because I love property development. I mean, I do my own obviously, and that's exciting. But I love getting involved in other people's projects. I mean, how good a job is this? You know, to actually have something that you love doing and do it, but then also to get the added benefit of getting involved in helping other people do what you do. That's why I'm not lying on a beach. I've tried it twice, I got to tell you. I've tried lying on a beach twice, which is another name for pulling the plug and being retired. It doesn't work for me. Give me 2 weeks of that.
It drives me nuts too, so don't worry.
I think it's all about balance, though. I mean, you interview a lot of people, and I think it's a lot about life balance, isn't it?
Yes. And a lot of them say that you've got to get away just to have a bit of time to recharge. When you come back, you're refreshing. You look at things from a different perspective. But if you keep doing the grind, you never get away to really think. So
I know how to work hard and I know how to relax hard. So I think I've sort of got it worked out after a few years.
If you wish to connect with Anderson to find out more about his strategies or educational resources, you can visit his website.
Probably the simplest way, really, is to jump onto my website, which is propertymastermind.com.au. Pretty simple, propertymastermind.com.au. It's all there. It's all about property development, what it means, how you can do it, and how I can help you get into it, change your life, make a lot of money, change your life, change your family's life. That's what it's done for me. It's what it's done for lots of people. So, simple. Go to the website, propertymastermind.com.au.
Thank you to Bob Anderson, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar, Bob Anderson, and select that episode to learn more about his story. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe.
These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinveststory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.